Welcome back to the Munich Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. With me tonight is J.R. Peters.
Hello.
Here at the Munich Movie Club, we're a group of friends who selects a handful of movies every month. We select three movies every month. And we write a review of those movies on munichmovie.club. And at the end of that month, we get together to discuss those movies on our podcast here. And this last month, we've been theming things out lately. And this last month, we built a trio around Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Going with the Wuxia tradition, we paired it with Hero, and we paired it with the Grandmaster. But first, we're going to talk about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. I don't know, the 25th, 26th Marvel movie, introducing the new character of Shang-Chi, played by Simu Liu. The Ten Rings part is the criminal organization that his father established. He also holds 10 rings around his wrists of indeterminate power. It makes him immortal, more or less. And Shang-Chi fled his father's organization, and he's brought back in over the course of the movie, and then a bunch of CGI goop happens at the end. JR, what did you think of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings?
I thought it was pretty good. Probably like a solid B movie for me. Nothing amazing, nothing bad, just a run-of-the-mill movie, basically.
I think on my end, it contains some of the very best stuff the MCU has ever done, and some of the most solidly average nonsense as it reaches its climax. This is an origin story of which the MCU has done so many, but it's also a part of this like larger continuing story. We mentioned, however, like we're past the two dozen, we're well past the two dozen mark at this point with MCU movies. So as far as an origin story, JR, do you feel like this, like, are you concerned with the continuing antics of Shang-Chi and, the other characters introduced in this movie?
Nah, what do you mean by concerned? What do you like?
Like if he popped up in a TV show, one of the TV shows, or in Doctor Strange, next year or whatever, would you be like, oh, great, that's fun. I miss that character.
I would not go out of my way to watch it, but I wouldn't be mad that Shang-Chi and, I guess, Awkwafina, less so,
Awkwafina, sure, yeah,
was in it. It's not like Black Widow or whatever, where you're like, Jesus Christ, do I have to watch this movie? Like, but yeah, this is a character that I enjoy, but is not at the top of my list of people I want to see. You know, I want to see Thor in another Taika Waititi movie. You know, I want to see another Black Panther movie, stuff like that. But it's not like that, and they don't have the hate that I have for just Black Widow and Hawkeye. So
okay, that's fair. It does seem like the way the movie leaves, like the Ten Rings organization, like that's just tailor made for like the secondary villain in some Disney Plus TV show. And then I don't think they haven't announced a sequel to this. It's just so hard to tell if a movie is successful or not in this period of time. I'm sure this, I don't have it on top of my, in front of me, but I'm sure this movie made a shit ton of money, and we'll see more of it. As far as how it fits with the larger MCU, I really appreciated how standalone this Shang-Chi is. There isn't a lot of interconnected nonsense. You get the feel that this is in fact a movie and not a episode of a TV show until like the very end. There's really only a couple of like fifth level cameos from other MCU characters. I feel like they have a good handle on like those kind of interconnected movies. They're just not interesting to me. I could give a shit. Just like the dull roar that like bubbles through a theater when a new character shows up, or not a new character, when like a character that people recognize shows up. It's so depressing to me. It's so depressing.
I would say yes and no. For me, it depends on how they do it. I guess like Panther is a good example of one where they bring in the white dude, the two white dudes, Claw.
Oh yeah,
They end up killing him, and then Frodo Baggins.
The CIA agent.
Yeah, though that's good because they're like they're there, But it's not like, hey, I'm Tony Stark. Oh my God. And, you know, like Tony Stark coming into the first Spider-Man movie and just like giving this dude like a fucking suit or whatever. Maybe it wasn't the
like
first.
Like that's especially relevant with like a new Spider-Man coming out. Like just the impact of the MCU has like kind of ruined those movies and that character of Spider-Man as much as I give a shit about the integrity of the character of Spider-Man, which isn't a lot.
Yeah.
But
so you care so much about Peter Parker for the ninth time.
Yeah, I got the underoos and everything.
God.
Does anyone in this movie match what Tony Leung is doing as Shang-Chi's father, Zhu Wenwu, the immortal holder of the Ten Rings, or is he just completely blowing everybody off the screen?
His
kind
wife,
of a rhetorical question.
In the whole opening shot from the where they're fighting each other in the forest or whatever and falling in love.
That is in the running for my favorite scene in any of these MCU movies.
Yeah, it was great. Just as a lover of the martial arts movies like this, which is why I suggested we do all three of these movies together.
A solid recommendation. Yeah,
and I loved that they were just like Disney was like, yo, fuck it, we'll let you do a movie in fucking Chinese. Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make, they were like, fuck it, we'll let you do the first 10 minutes of one of our movies in Chinese, and people we got to read
these on top of like the technique. Destin Daniel Cretton directed this movie. Short Term 12 and The Glass Castle, kind of a failure literary adaptation from a few years ago, not especially prolific and certainly not an action director in any way, shape, or form. And I'm sure they brought in like top-notch fight choreographers for this movie. But you know, he is the director, so I'll give him some amount of credit. But just like he gets that style down in something like the next two movies we're gonna talk about, in something like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And it's also like the MCU is a completely sexless franchise. People may as well be Ken dolls and Barbies with just shaved off crotches. There's just nothing going on down there. It's totally sexless. And that was, and it's on top of just the choreography of it and the belt and like the balletic nature of it. It's extremely sexy to see these two actors getting so close to each other and getting so physical with each other. It's completely stands out in the MCU as just containing, I mean, one is like a magic woman from an alternate dimension or whatever that's hidden behind a secret forest, and the other guy is an immortal dude with bracelets. But it just, that interaction is so completely human. And
yeah,
I'm really talking to myself. It might be my favorite thing the MCU has ever done.
It's up there. One of the ones I really liked, just to put it in there to compare, is basically Thor's whole thing when he goes back to whatever, you know, them making Thor human, basically.
Okay.
A human dude.
Just that longer arc.
He becomes you know, thinks he's a god, fucks up, goes into depression, gets fat, travels back in time, you know, sees his mom and is like fucking crying like a baby. Like that. I love that. Everything about that. But this was great. I watched this.
As far as like a scene you can pull out of a single movie.
Yeah.
Like this, it's like, it's really incredible that I was able to like be snuck in. And what goes along with it too, is that if you're going to make a movie as like martial arts focused as this one, all like the cinematic culture that goes along with that is just, there are better fight choreographers and action choreographers working in that realm than there are in like the pew pew lasers and magic powers area of the, like just the action in any given scene is as good or better than anything they've ever done before, because it has to be, because it absolutely has to be.
That, because that's what this is about. That's what martial art, it's gotta be boom. And it's not like you say, these other ones where it's just like, this dude's got a new power and we have no basis on this. We've got 100 years of martial arts movies where we've been watching people do whatever freaking, you know, like you said, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon gets nominated
for an Oscar. It was like a huge success. Huge, and like Jackie Chan success. Is like one of the most famous people in the world.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee there's is a like, very deep and long tradition of this kind of stuff.
The one thing I'll say I really, really liked about that scene was you see, for instance, in both of these movies we're about to see, you see people that are in love fighting. You see people that hate each other fighting. You see people that like fell out of love fighting. But I've never seen two people falling in love while they're fighting. And, you know, I'm sure it's out there, but just off top of my head right now, it's not a thing I can remember. And so I think that helped me like it even more, was like, oh shit, like they're not just doing it well, they're doing something new I haven't seen. And then you're like, and it's a Marvel movie, they're doing this is amazing. So just like watching how, you know, they're fighting Tony, how do you say his last name?
Leung.
Leung, he starts smiling. Like, you see her.
They're getting into it. There's character in the scene as they're fighting. You're figuring out who she is.
Yep.
It's just they don't speak. They aren't trading like sassy quips back to each other.
Nope.
Like in Cap. I like Captain America and Civil War, but like they're like at an improv night while they're fighting with each other in that movie.
I mean, even just when she throws him and then takes the time to, instead of letting him hit the ground, she does her magic or whatever and throws him into the puddle of water, moves him 30 feet across the yard into the puddle of water, disappears. And Tony comes out of the water and is like that. That's like, he comes out of the water realizing he's been beat. But also, you can see on his face, he's like, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I
need. Yeah, like he's been waiting for something like this to happen. Like an equal adversary for 1,000 years.
It's like the Grandmaster, they have a quote in there where it's like, something better than a friend is your equal. Like you just said, you're an opponent that's worth keeping. So then you've got something better than a friend is the opponent worth, the equal opponent. And then you're also like in love with this person. Boom right there.
It really sells Tony Leung's character a lot better than I think Shang-Chi himself. Probably because one is leaving this franchise forever and one is going to stick around. And maybe the idea is that they'll continue to like grow him out. But I think you do kind of screw yourself when you cast like one of the greatest actors working today in Tony Leung. He's just going to blow people away. And that's kind of what happened here. Like it's just as much his movie as it is Simu Liu's. And that fact, I think, detracts from like the future of this character in this like particular part of the world, because however it ends up going, it's not going to have Tony Leung in it anymore. So it's always going to be a little bit less than the best moments in this movie. All this praise really speaks to like the confidence the MCU has and like being able to try new stuff. Like the standard line from, I wouldn't even say critics, I would say more like this, the line that like PR, that Marvel PR puts out there. It's like, oh, this time we're making an homage to 70s spy thrillers, and this time we're doing an homage to corny space operas of the early 80s. I don't really ever buy that. I think for like 60% of this movie, 75% of this movie, it 100% holds up with any number of like wire fu wuxia movies, like Hero, like The Grandmaster, with a lot of like Jackie Chan comedic stunts thrown in. And then you get to the climax when just the weight of the MCU takes over and it ceases to become anything interesting and becomes two dragons fighting in the air. I was so let down by this movie.
The ending, and I will always come back to this. It's not as bad, but anytime that happens, I just feel like I just get disappointed. Like when I watch Wonder Woman.
It's these movies don't they forget what they have in anticipation of we have to keep these visual effects studios in business.
Because of the way they've set up everything, everyone expects some big bad thing. Like the one movie you get where it's not a giant dude versus a giant dude, or you get a couple of them, is like Black Panther. It's two dudes fighting, basically, like this has been. Civil War ends three dudes fighting, or what? You know, like they could have done that. They've done it.
Very easily. Granted, they could have
done. Yeah, granted, those guys are superpowered, but so are these dudes. Like, it's not like they don't have precedence for this. They just throw in a fucking dragon because they're like, you know what is a cool legend that Eastern Asia has in it? All of them have dragons, bro. Let's throw in a dragon. It's like, why? Why?
It's such a dumbing down of where the movie had been going. Again, you have Tony Lee Young, and he's not phoning it in. He's invested in what you're doing. And he's so obviously the primary villain for this kind of origin story. It doesn't have to be about what's going to destroy the planet this time. It can just be about straightening this family out, and that's a story. It's the fucking coolest family in the world, but that's fine. They still are people, even though one is like 2,000 years old or however old he is. Recognize what you have. I guess you're right in the sense that there. Once they introduce this other like old god style Cthulhu force into the world, they can't really push it off into the next movie. That would have been my thought. How to improve the ending is to just say that this thing existed. It was strong enough to poison the mind of one of the most powerful men on the planet. But you don't necessarily have to see him. And you certainly don't have to, like, eliminate this threat. It seems like where this character is going is he's just going to be folded in to, like, the Doctor Strange area of the world. And he's going to travel the galaxy, whatever. There just seems like there was plenty of story.
Yeah.
Within Earth. For this like lower level character,
or even at the minimum, it doesn't have to be two dragons fighting. If you want to bring in the old god, like you said, Cthulhu dude, make it so that once Cthulhu comes through, whenever they come through, whenever dude comes through, you could have even just been like, oh, Tony Young realizes he's fucked up, and they fight this one dude. Like, why does have to start riding a dragon? Like,
yeah, they don't even stay.
They
with
don't
the
even
way
need
they...
the second dragon. I agree with you completely. Get rid of both dragons, but to bring in the second dragon makes it egregious to me. That ending, just get rid of that second dragon. You get the power of family right there, like Dom in
sure.
And then boom, boom, bang, bang, boom. Everybody fights together, and they beat him back somehow.
And Tony Leung like dies in the process.
Yeah,
passes on his power. Yeah, that's better. You're right. Just like I don't have any idea what Shang-Chi is actually doing in the finale, like how he's taking down. Like it all revolves around Awkwafina, who's like never shot an arrow in her life, getting this perfect shot off. As opposed to the villagers who have been shooting arrows their entire lives. Movies always do that shit, and it always bugs the crap out of me. Like, she has to be present, and she has to take part in this, like, interdimensional fight that they're having. It just becomes the most obvious thing in the world. Like, of course, everything is going to happen how it happens.
Yes.
And they don't surprise in any way, shape, or form.
This random person has to be the one that saves everyone. And the dude that taught her has to die, because now she's going to be the archer.
Yeah. Speaking of Awkwafina, Where are you at on her? I'm a fan in general. But I can imagine people finding her a little annoying.
It depends on what I see her in.
She was great in Farewell. I don't know if you've seen that. Like, that's a great dramatic performance.
Farewell was amazing. Loved it. Everything about it. Awkwafina was great. This, I hated her.
Okay, that's fair.
She
is a character in every Marvel movie ever.
Yeah.
And I don't think she really distinguishes herself.
She's just annoying. Like, it's what you said. I just don't like them just like, she's just there to quip for like 40 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is a liability in half of it. And you're just like, okay, I get it. Disney's got their thing they're doing, the formula. Oh, I got to save this person while fighting this person. And I mean, that's a formula in everything, but it's like, they don't even try to like stray from that. You know, like they just, let's throw Awkwafina in here as our comedic whatever on the side and deal with it. But like you said, I've heard she's good in Nora from Queens, but she was in Ocean's 8, which was not terrible.
Yeah.
Like,
I liked her in Neighbors 2. That was the first place I saw her.
Yeah, Neighbors 2. But Farewell, amazing. But then you get this where you're just like, this is annoying.
I mean, I get it. It's just like the standard actor progression these days where it just eventually you get folded into this franchise. And yeah, it happened to her. It happened to Simu Liang, but at least he's done with it.
That was a selling point for him.
Yeah, that he's out. That's fair.
You're gonna be the dude. You're gonna be the bad guy. You're gonna actually know martial arts. You're gonna do XYZ, and you're out.
And then you're done. Yeah.
And he's like, "Dope, I can do that."
One scene I felt I really missed from this movie, and I think would have elevated it a little further, was the breaking point for Shang-Chi, like young Shang-Chi. His dad sends him out on this assassination mission when he's like 14. And I mean, stop me if I'm wrong here, but he completes the mission as a 14-year-old and then he disappears. He doesn't leave before the mission is completed. To not show a 14-year-old being like forced to be a child soldier and like killing a man, it speaks to, again, just like the limits of this franchise. There's only so much they can ever really get away with. It's just a really big mistake as far as his character and as far as his dad's character.
So,
and I think it would have been a good scene, especially for someone like Dustin Daniel Cretton, whose best movie still is Short Term 12, which is about like childhood trauma. I think he could have really handled that very well. And the movie, I don't think Marvel would allow something like that in their movies. I think they keep such a tight content grasp on these movies that just that would be like a bridge too far for them.
Okay, and that here's the thing is like, I thought they showed this dude going to town. And that could have entirely have just been me listening to him and then like all in my head. Well, damn.
I think an old god is whispering to you to imagine stuff that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's sad.
The last thing I want to say about Shang-Chi is there's just like this classic liberal feminism moment at the end where like Shang-Chi's sister is able to ascend to the top of this underground crime ring that deposes governments and runs shit around the world. Like, hooray, women are taking over these awful organizations.
And she doesn't just take over. She just replaces all of the people with women, too.
Yes, I guess. Women can be assassins and world-class spies, too. We did it. This is what Susan B. Anthony wanted the whole time. I don't know. Watching the...
Fuck Susan B. Anthony.
Yeah, that's fair. I was watching... Sojourner Truth was right. She did it. Good job, Sojourner. There you go.
Yeah, I have to say, before I start getting attacked by everyone, she was racist. That's why I said fuck her. So.
Yeah.
Because I know people aren't going to Google. Why does JR hate... If you actually Google that, you might actually get a couple tweets from me.
He's not a fan of those dollar coins. They suck. I was watching like the tail end of the Aladdin remake, and like the feminist take on that one is the liberal feminist take on that one is like Jasmine becomes the new absolute despotic ruler of Agrabah. Hooray! it's just classic not considering systems and just looking at like the face of diversity. Okay, yeah, that's my little nonsense leftist moment. That's cool. Last word on Shang-Chi, JR, before we move on.
Watch it. I'm like, they've caught me. I watch every fucking movie. I've watched all the fucking Disney Plus shits. I'm watching Hawkeye week to week, mostly because I like Hailee Steinfeld.
Oh yeah, but I haven't started watching that, but I plan to eventually.
Yeah, but like this is definitely a higher, I'd say a higher one, not the top, but like, yeah, just if you're watching those, like no reason not to watch it. If you're anti-superhero movie, this is not the one that I'd be like, oh yeah, this is the one you should watch.
I do think it's one that you could walk into having never seen a Marvel movie before. I think you'd be okay in that respect, but I don't think those people exist, and it kind of just betrays that at the end anyways. I think it's like mid-tier. I think it was headed towards the upper tier until the ending, and then it just settled at like 13th or 14th best in the franchise. Which, you know, they have a good quality control department, so that's not a bad place to be. Hero is our next movie. This is directed by Zhang Yimou, who has an interesting career that we're going to talk about. 2002 movie. Quentin Tarantino was a huge fan, and he brought it over to the United States, where it became a pretty solid hit, where after it was a big hit in China. This is a Rashomon-esque style story about Jet Li, who plays a nameless assassin, who takes on three other assassins who are attempting to kill the aspiring emperor of China in like the second century BC, somewhere around there. JR, what do you think of initial thoughts on Hero?
This is an A. I have like pure unadulterated love for this movie. I don't know. I saw it. I know one of the reasons is that it's just beautiful, and that might bring it up more than it should. But I love this movie. It is an A. I'm sure you're going to tear me apart, but hey, that's what we need.
Yeah, this will be a good discussion.
Yeah.
I agree with you that this is one of the most beautiful and visually impressive movies of perhaps the 21st century thus far. I find its politics gross in a way that I'm looking forward to talking about. Zhang Yimou has... He's had a pretty long career. He's directed this. He's directed a previous MMC movie, The Great Wall.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, I mean, The Great Wall was fun. I enjoyed The Great Wall. C+. Honestly, the same. I gave it the same grade as Hero.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know what? I think the discussion is over, and I'm just going to go home. My God. I didn't even think The Great Wall was fun the whole time.
I had a really good time with it. What the hell is happening? And that movie is also propaganda in its own way, but different. And we're going to talk about that. But he also is maybe most famous for choreographing the 2008 Beijing Olympics opening ceremony. So this guy has a reputation of being like very close to the Chinese government. He is maybe the most famous Chinese director. But at the same time, he made a movie called Coming Home in 2014 that was about like the aftermath of the Cultural Revolution. And I feel like if you're like the favored son of the Chinese Communist Party, you can't really make a movie talking about how Mao totally destroyed families across the entire country. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt most of the time. I was stunned that this movie was as propagandistic as it is.
Oh, it is pure. pure propaganda.
I had seen, I don't think I had ever watched it closely before. I had seen it maybe like an hour at a time. Maybe I saw it in like the early 2000s or the mid 2000s. But this last time. Okay, so what is this movie about? This movie is about the correctness of the Emperor, who is a real person, who is the character you play as in Civilization VI if you select China. What's it? It's like Qin Shi Huang, I want to say.
Qin
is the historical figure. He is the emperor who unified the whatever Chinese provinces existed at the time under one banner. The assassins do not, in fact, kill him. They fail. Nameless, played by Jet Li. He is both convinced by the assassins and by the emperor to not kill him, even though it would be very easy for him to do so. And then he sacrifices his life at the very end so that the emperor can demonstrate how he adheres to the law. If you transplanted this movie to any other country, I feel like it would be disgraceful. Like, if this was about the rightness of American manifest destiny, anybody would correctly be like, yeah, that movie's disgusting.
But that is a bet. It would be more apt to say this is about you. Before we come over, we've got said this never happened, but we've got, you know, we've got all those the Native American,
sure, yeah,
the First Nations people, all of them. And if they were fighting, you know, that one dude was coming through and trying to take over everything and then unite it. That is way less bad.
There is like racial unity, I suppose.
Right.
I don't know that. China is a huge country.
This is also true. Ginormous. But they make the idea is more that it's like bringing together the same people who have been, who are separated and hating each other. It's bringing them together versus like the rightness of manifest destiny is, bro, we're just wiping motherfuckers out because they are not European white motherfuckers. Like, it, totally two different levels. But to your point, like you just said, I don't know enough about Asia in general.
And I'm not going to claim to be either.
Yeah.
I did a little bit of supplemental reading after watching this. But you think about, I mean, it obviously takes place like before the Great Wall is even built. I believe this emperor is the one who builds the Great Wall, or at least starts building it. Like present day China is like aggressively trying to claim like little clumps of dirt in the South China Sea and is like actively trying to bring Taiwan back under their influence because they consider it part of China. You've got like the Uyghurs off in Xinjiang. Who knows if I'm pronouncing that right, province, and you've got Tibet. If I was on the Chinese Politburo and I watched this movie, I was like, you're goddamn fucking right. We should all unite China under one banner. Like all of this cultural difference. And like, this is part of what they're putting the Uyghurs through in like these concentration camps or re-education camps, or like, your culture is bad, our culture is good, and you should all just unite under one single culture for the good of the entire nation. It's like indistinguishable from the philosophy of this movie, which I really don't think the movie casts any doubt on. I don't think the movie considers like Chinese unification as like a necessary evil. I think it sees it as like an unalloyed good. There's like a one or two tossed off lines about, the emperor talks about how foolish it is for there to be like 20 symbols for one word. And part of his unification campaign is like one language, one written word, et cetera, et cetera. The other side of that is like, you see the calligraphy students in a rival province who are very nobly working through like a hail of arrows coming through. So that's the one little piece that I could maybe hang on to. Like, what you're getting rid of by unifying the language was something valuable. But it's good that you got rid of it anyways. It's really hard to make excuses for this movie. And I really want to because it looks so good.
So I'm watching this movie, and my thing is, I'm looking at it as Donnie Yen gets the fake death because he thinks that Jet Li is going to kill the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Broken Sword.
Yeah.
Is he the one that fights? No, he doesn't fight.
He also had a chance to kill the Emperor. And is talked out of it.
And it
I can't, talks I can't out remember of it. How that scene goes.
So
I think
yeah.
he is just talked out of it.
He doesn't even get talked out of it. He just
gets
is about
the place
to kill
and
him
walks
and
away.
Just doesn't kill him. See, here's the problem: is I'm like talking through this stuff, and there's like five different ways all of these things happen because of this, the way the story,
yeah.
the story is like four different narratives on what happened, and
it's
I'm trying to color
coded.
Yeah,
beautifully.
Which one exactly?
It's always a surprise every time it changes colors. It's always striking every time it changes colors. But my interpretation is like the last thing that happens is what actually happened.
Right. The last thing that happened, but the last thing that happened is it's Broken Sword and not Moon, but the other woman.
Snow.
So Broken Sword and Snow. He actually defeats Snow, but because he's good enough, he doesn't kill her. And then because Tony Leung is just like so deep in his heart with this feeling, he just lets him have the second sword because he's like, let me write this one thing. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's just two, and of course they're the men, but it's the two guys are just done fighting. This is like a like Logan-ish type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're,
yeah, that's the takeaway, that Broken Sword.
Right.
To Nameless, who gives it to the Emperor. Like a warrior, the best kind of warrior is the one who doesn't want to fight.
They don't want to fight anymore. They realize that like fighting this without this unification, it's just going to be people getting slaughtered left and right and left and right. And people are still going to die.
And the history of this period is that the very next Emperor after this guy, it immediately collapsed again. So it didn't make any... very rudimentary history here, but I guess the Kinshui, if I'm pronouncing the name right, or if I even have it right at all, Kinshi Huang, he gave the idea of a unified China to future leaders, but it immediately fell apart after his death. It's not like this brought in a new era of peace. Like it's all just pure nationalism.
It is. But here's the other question is, are you going to look at this as these are how two dudes that of the time that are tired of fighting felt, or are we going to look at it through the lens of
what's going to happen
2001? Right.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think going into it without saying we know that China's going to end up fucking people up and just being horrible. Yep, we just got deep platformed. But if you go without saying, okay, this is not, we need to look through this through the modern lens. We're just going to look through this at two fighters that end up realizing that they don't want to, people shouldn't be dying for this. And, you know, that it should be a country where everybody is together and yada, yada, yada. Because it's not like these other parts of the, so it's not like, from my understanding, all of these provinces each had their own like emperor, mm-hmm. king dude. They weren't like, it wasn't like this was like a group of free dudes,
sure,
and this king was coming in. It's like this king wanted to topple this king and bring him in, and all they're seeing is people fighting, people dying, and so it's like, hey, let's unify this. We don't have to fight anymore. People will die. People are gonna die anyway. This less people are going to die if we don't kill this guy, because we're the only people that can kill this guy.
I think that is all true as far as the movie's philosophy is concerned. And I also think that's the difference between like an Eastern and a Western movie, where like the Western individualist frame at least if you're of a certain political persuasion, is that just like concentrated power, its nature is to destroy people. Whereas maybe an Eastern frame would be like, well, no, concentrated power is peace and order. And I mean, we mentioned the farewell, like this came up in the farewell too. Like what's good for the family, what's good for the family is better than what's good for the individual. And the piece of in the farewell of lying about this diagnosis is better than the pain of like understanding that your death is imminent. So like that's something I think that Chinese movies do concern themselves with, especially on this scale, this like historical epic scale, grand operatic, flying through the air, dipping in the water. Like yeah, it's all existing on a plane of like pure fantasy. But yeah.
Pure fantasy it's coming from the minds of people that have been told for their entire life it's about the people, the Chinese Communist Party, you know, everything's for the people.
Yeah.
So I and get
like,
what you're saying.
Stripping the communist part out of it, just like the nature of China today and when this movie was made is to like keep folding these disobedient provinces into itself. And I mean, it does it ruthlessly. So yeah. It's just very difficult to separate it out. Like the movie that I honestly thought of while I was watching this movie was like Triumph of the Will, like the Leni Riefenstahl pro-Nazi movie.
I have not seen this.
I have not either. I would kind of be interested in seeing it just as like a historical document, but like that movie is like unimpeachable as far as like how it's made and like the scale and the awe of it. But it's in purpose to like nasty stuff, or
talk about that anytime because every Tarantino movie is in purpose for him to get on a movie and either say the N word or like lick somebody's feet.
Among other things. I mean, if he can get some feet in there, then so much the better. But it's not the only thing he's got on his mind.
I know, but like I feel like this dude, he just wants to say the N-word, and that's the only reason he's making movies anymore.
It's hard to argue with. So that's a lot on the theme of this movie. As far as like the style of it, again, just like unimpeachable. If it wasn't so uncomfortable to watch this movie, for me, it would be my favorite martial arts movie. Maggie Cheung and Tony Leung reuniting after In the Mood for Love. They are obviously great. Zhang Yimou knows how to film them to make them look as they often look, like the most beautiful, cool people on the planet at any point in history, which they often do. Jet Li, you know, he's not here to act necessarily, but like he's a very strong physical presence. The same as Donnie Yen, who only has the one scene as Sky. Zhang Ziyi, who we're going to talk about again in The Grandmaster, as Moon, who is Broken Sword's assistant. She is also one of the most beautiful people on the planet. Just like this movie knows exactly what it has. And then in combination with the fight choreography, which is distinct throughout, they don't repeat themselves. The fights are different. There is always some added wrinkle or some new environment. And there are lots of fights too. Like this is an action heavy movie for as like deliberately paced as it is.
Yeah. Very odd. that was one thing I noticed when I rewatched it was like, I was like, oh, wow, there are a lot of fights for an hour and a half. It's not like basically The Raid.
Yeah, like he's not fighting goons.
Yeah, like this, they're taking the time to make beautiful scenes, and usually you're going to get like four of those in a two-hour movie or whatever.
Yeah, Grandmaster, for example.
Yeah.
There's less fighting.
Yeah, same length movie, half the fights.
Yeah. Grandmaster. As far as like standout fights, the Leaf fight between Snow and Moon is probably my favorite, just because Maggie Cheung has quit acting. She hasn't really been in anything in like 16 years, 20 years.
I was really hoping that Maggie Cheung was going to be Shang-Chi's mom.
That would have been incredible.
Yeah, I probably would have stopped the movie right when I saw her and been like, A plus, I'm done.
That would have overshadowed the Goop. She would have been the anti-Goop if that had happened. I also really like Sword and Nameless fighting over Snow's body, even though it takes place in this like imagined part of the movie that didn't really happen. Obviously, it makes no sense physics-wise. Who gives a shit?
Yeah,
it's just absolutely beautiful.
If you care about the wire work, you're not watching any movie that came out, any martial arts movie basically that came out from 1999 to like 2006.
Yeah. So. I just wish it was contained in a movie that wasn't about the rightless Chinese expansion.
Listen, I'm going to say my favorite fights. So,
yeah, please.
I would say,
let's Chris Farley it up. This movie deserves it.
What is that?
Oh, like the Chris Farley show from SNL. Like he just has like Paul McCartney on. Like it was so awesome when you made that, when you wrote that song. He just says like, that was awesome.
Yeah. My favorite fight, probably, I would say Sword and Nameless. And then if you take into context what they were doing, I love Donnie Yen. Yeah, Sky and Nameless.
Yeah, that's a really good fight.
Yeah, to have that fight, the first one they show, obviously, be in, like, with the water, the rain coming down, the dude playing the music, the fight being in their head, having the fight be awesome, but the fight being in their head and then making the swift, the guy playing the sitar breaks the chords right when they break the chord, they both go for their fight. And because Nameless has won the fight in their head, he gets the one move win outside. Just everything about, like, if you're considering everything, I fucking love that. Maybe one of my favorite fights in a movie ever. But if you're just looking at the choreography, I would say that's probably...
I'm getting chills thinking about that scene.
Yeah.
This hero is, I would prefer to be where you are, JR. Truly, I would. The act of watching this movie and not remembering how it goes, and I had seen a lot of these scenes before, like I said, but just like being in total awe and admiration for everybody involved, and then just seeing it all culminate as it does. And just being so disappointed, like, God damn it. I mean, I just can't. I'm just repeating myself at this point, but I just cannot strip it out.
No, I get it. And I'm not saying you're wrong, but
I think, yeah, I stand by my C+ determination.
I stand by my A.
Your A is right too. Your A is right.
Yeah. And I will. The question is the only reason, like, what would it be if it wasn't, if he ends up killing him in the end?
I think, like, we mentioned the Great Wall. The Great Wall is, like, that is also Chinese propaganda in the sense of, like, any Tony Scott or Michael Bay or Peter Berg movie is American propaganda in the sense that it's elevating what is perceived to be an American, like, soft value. Usually, like, freedom or grit or whatever in the case of America. With the Great Wall, the value is like acting as a unit, cohesion, soft values, not these borders should be here. And I think that's the difference. So I think if Hero landed on just something not as concrete as the borders of China and everybody should submit to the will of the emperor, then I would be able to overlook a lot of this stuff. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand, but I'm trying to figure out a way that it does that.
It's like bittersweet about it. Like the movie, down to the final text crawl, like this was an unequivocal success for the emperor and for China by extension.
So maybe if they reconcile the fact that it goes bad, are you like B+, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe, or just if like this is a thing that happened. Like China was united But I think if the movie was just more clear-eyed about what, like, the power of unification means, like, it means crushing resistance. Like, there's a famous quote from, like, a Roman historian where Rome makes a desert and calls it peace. I think about that kind of that quote a lot. Like, yes, or just to grapple with what it means to have, like, peace through military strength. And I don't think the movie does it at all.
I get you.
Yeah.
So, and I think it does a bit by being like, people, they're like, yo, people are, I guess they don't explicitly ever say, I guess that's an interpretation I always have, is like, they make the realization that people are going to die either way it goes.
Yeah.
And I think that the whole ideal thing is that, like, with us gone and these guys having this opportunity, it's less people dying.
I also think that's, like, the rationale of every would-be conqueror throughout history. Like, if you all would just submit to my will, then we can all get along.
Right. They grapple with it a little bit. That's my point. That's enough. And it's just not enough. It's not enough for you.
It's not. It's so disappointing.
Yeah, yeah, not enough for you, and I'm looking at it and just being like, I fucking love this movie.
Yeah,
and this is a movie that I probably watch. You know, there's, like, your rewatchables list. I know you don't do this. Just other normal people do.
There's endless amounts of movies to watch.
Yeah. There are, like, 10 movies that I watch every year. And this is one of them.
Yeah, totally fair. Totally fair. Like I would put this movie in, like, the category of, if I had a bar and I didn't want to just show ESPN, I would just show movies on mute the whole time. And, like, yeah, this would be one of them. Yeah.
And I, you know, I got the nice OLED TV, so I watched it on that this every year. And it's just like, This and the Grandmaster, it's like fucking, I guess.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Orgasmic. I
mean, it's a sexy movie.
Yeah.
The Grandmaster is our final movie. This is directed by Wong Kar-wai, a famous Hong Kong director who directed previous MMC movie In the Mood for Love, widely regarded as one of the greatest living directors, even though he only made 4 movies in the 20th century, and this is the only one he's made in 14 years, The Grandmaster. This is the story, and again, with the pronunciation, this is the story of Ip Man, who will eventually become Bruce Lee's teacher, even though Bruce Lee is not in the movie at all. It is about, we'll say the first, or no, we'll say like 20, 25 years of his life in the China that exists between World War II and the ascension of Mao Zedong and the Chinese Communist Party. It is also about his contemporary, Gong Er, who is in a more traditional, like, revenge storyline against the guy who killed her father, whereas Ip Man doesn't really do much in this movie. JR, initial thoughts on The Grandmaster?
So I've only seen this movie once, and I think the beauty of it might have just took me, because, like, I probably have it in our grade sheet as, like, an A, because it is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely beautiful. But on second watch, it's probably like a B-.
I did the same thing. I downgraded from a B+ to a B. There are a lot of different versions of this movie. This came out in 2012. It was released by the Weinstein Company, and as he often did, Harvey Weinstein really chopped the shit out of it. The version that was initially released in America is like 108 minutes, and it does a lot of hand-holding about, like, the history of the period, whereas the Chinese cut, which is like 25 minutes longer, is supposedly the better one. I didn't really discern much of a difference. JR, have you seen the Chinese version?
I did not know there was a Chinese version. I watched it on Netflix in 2013, so probably not.
I watched the American version in theaters when it came out in 2012, and I recently watched the Chinese version, and they were separated enough to where I couldn't really tell the difference. Like, the Chinese version one is definitely less handholdy in my recollection of the American version. but it also has like extra characters that I that are not related to the Ip Man and the Gong Er zone of the movie. They kind of just come in and like one character whose name is the Razor, like he has a couple cool fight scenes, but he's totally disconnected from anything that's happening, to the best of my understanding. So I don't necessarily feel like the longer version of the Grandmaster improves too terribly much. What both versions share are the fight scenes, which, as artistic and artistically minded as someone like Wong Kar-wai is, someone who's very concerned about like internal emotions and unsaid longings and desires, he really fucking brings it when it comes to fight choreography here. This is, again, very much in the Wuxia tradition, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon tradition, where like people aren't really paying attention to physics. That said, they're not necessarily like flying through the air or jumping off of tree limbs or leaves or water surfaces or whatever.
Yeah,
it does occupy like especially later in the movie, it does occupy like a bone shattering kind of place, while also being just about as graceful as it possibly could be.
It's whatchamacallit. It's fights on the moon, not fights on fucking asteroid.
I gotcha. <That's solid.
laughs> Like there's actually gravity in these, like, but you still get that weightlessness of, you know, people are fighting up here and they get kicked off the balcony and they come down eventually. They don't
just fly. This is a recognizable reality.
Yeah.
Just a tiny bit. The two characters of Ip Man and Gong Er, Tony Leung, as much as we have sung his praises, is not asked really to do anything in this movie, but just be this totally placid guy who knows exactly what he's good at and what he's great at, and he is completely unperturbed by everything. He loses his family over the course of the war. He loses daughters. He never sees his wife again after he is secluded in Hong Kong once it's shut off by the communist government. You wouldn't know at all that this was like a sad story for him, because he kind of just does the same thing every time. Comparing him to Ziyi Zhang, who plays Gong Er, who was also in Hero as Moon, she is the far more interesting character, but she never, but well, one, she's not real, and two, she didn't eventually teach Bruce Lee how to do martial arts, so the movie can't really be about her. But I much would have preferred that movie, even though like she's just in a basic revenge story that as incredible as she looks and as beautifully as she's filmed, there's not really much to it. This movie's just pretty thin.
It's basic just all the way through. It's just, I don't know why. I feel like I'm going to have to go to YouTube and watch like a 5 minute video about the making of this movie. I do know that it took like 12 years for them to make this movie.
I mean, that's shocking, because like Ip Man movies exist. I feel like there's like an ongoing series during this period of time. I haven't seen any of those movies. Is that Donnie Yen?
It's Donnie Yen, and okay. It's just dude fight.
Which sounds fine.
It's great. Ip Man, and it's Ip Man might have the first one might have the same like tomato meter rating as this.
Okay.
But it's
I think they've all been well reviewed.
Yeah.
I think it's well regarded.
I've seen all of them except the fourth one. But I think just like, yeah, there's a lot. And I think the first one, I'm looking it up now. The first one came out in 2008, and I think 4 just came out last year.
That sounds right. Yeah, that sounds right.
Like 2019.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of those. I would like.
They're worth a watch. Lots more fighting than this movie, just in general. But it's like, I think what happens, Wong Kar-wai, his entire thing is he wants you to just be in a mood when you're watching this movie, versus like, I want to make a great movie. Like, In the Mood for Love, he's making a fucking amazing movie.
Yeah, Thought to Bottom A Plus. All-timer.
Yeah, for sure. I haven't seen Chungking Express. Heard it's like one of the like fucking amazing, you know, one of those like, but he's just making good movies there. And this one feels like he's like trying to manipulate how you feel while you're watching it versus being like, I'm going to make something. Or maybe it's just like he made the thing he wanted to make at the age of 60 or whatever. And we're just all like, this does not work for me, which is probably more of what it was.
Yeah, like he's never made a movie like this previously. All of his movies are like slow burn romances for the most part. A lot of broken timeline stuff, especially like 2046, which I saw 75% of and honestly kind of lost interest in it once I couldn't figure out what was happening anymore. Here nor there. I this is another one like Hero that had a really high reputation in my head and just came down in the watching of it. I mean, I will allow for the possibility that this movie might play better if I had a better sense of like various kung fu schools. It seems like I just dipped my toe in like a wiki hole as far as like the various styles that are represented by Gong Er and her father.
Yeah. And the one where I was like, style. I know what's happened is Tai Chi.
Yeah. That's a part of this. And like a lot of the fights come out of Ip Man needing to demonstrate the superiority or the, at least the respectability of his particular style, which sounded cool, but I can't remember what his style is called exactly. Open fist or something.
Wang Chun.
Yeah, that's it. But just all that is over my head. The equivalent would be like if various zones in basketball had diehard adherence. They were like secret ways to go about doing it. And it, I don't know, like it is a sport. It is like an athletic ability, sure. But like, it's not like a be all end all kind of thing. Like just show me something fucking cool in these fights, which the movie often does. But I get the feeling that there's like this deeper like cultural meaning that is just over my head.
So I would agree with that. And then I'm going to also say that Ip Man and Ip Man 2, I think.
I'm just totally making up that pronunciation. I have no idea.
That's what they call them. Okay. And then I think in Chinese, when you're like imitating Chinese, you say Yip Man with a Y.
But, I think I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, but that I think that's like, I haven't seen this movie. I haven't seen Ip Man since like 2010. So this is entirely coming off of 11 years of memory and watching a lot of fucking movies. I'm pretty sure that's what happens in this. In Ip Man, is he's like fighting those other people. So you just see longer. It's hard to say like better fights. They're just completely different. Because like this one is, everything's like good. They're great fights, but it's like so heavily stylized.
Yeah, like the various kinds of like Hong Kong action movies or martial arts movies. There's like the wuxia variety that tends to be very serious and not so much Hong Kong, but just like martial arts movies in general. And there's like the Jackie Chan variety, which is like comedic and athletic. And then there's like lately, especially there's like the Raid kind of movies, or the Raid kind of style, which is just brutal and visceral and like a true representation of what it means to like snap someone's elbow into three pieces. And that's what I imagine Ip Man to be.
It is not. It's not. It's not brutal like that, but it's closer to that. But it's like also Tony Jaa style where you're just like wide angle lens. Let's watch this dude fight.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. Like I like everything. I like this movie. Don't get me wrong. And I suggested it because I legitimately was like, I'm suggesting an A movie and an A movie alongside Shang-Chi. Like,
yeah,
that's what I thought. And then after watching it, I'm like, love it. Love how it looks. Love how I feel while I'm watching it. Like, beautiful movie. Whoever the DP is, I think he had two of them in this movie. Both of them. Great. But it's like, watching the movie, I'm just like, what? For like a bit of it, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
For a second. Or just why is something happening, or what does it mean if like the fight goes the other way?
Yeah. Like then it comes back and just, you're like, okay.
Yeah. Like the stakes are pretty limited, especially in Ip Man's story where the stakes are like just like non-existent. Like he starts his school an hour in, give or take, and then he's done. Like the movie is finished with him. And then what I think brought Wong Kar-wai to this movie is the idea that like him and Gong Er have this forbidden romance, or this romance that never worked out. But again, that's barely in the movie and it's just not her main concern. Like her character is about forsaking everything else in her life to get revenge on this Japanese collaborator. She does in glorious fashion.
Which was dope. At that
train stop, which is an incredible scene. But
great fight. And then I don't think I've ever seen somebody thrown into a train.
Pretty great.
Of a running train in a movie. And I was like, that's fucking sweet.
Just the shadows and the fog and the smoke and what they're wearing, like their furs, and the way the light is just accentuating every hair on their coats. It's stunning. It is an absolutely stunning scene. He did get for the Grandmaster Yen Wu Ping, who is like the godfather of wire fu. He does do the fight choreography here. And like again, just that train fight is pretty incredible, as well as the fight between Ip Man and Gong Er, where just like the stakes are, whoever breaks something first is the loser, and that's just like I hadn't seen that before. And it's they're not fighting in a ring; they're fighting in like a library. So, like a lot of stuff could potentially be broken, and just like the grace of it, like that really evoked the scene between Tony Leung and Shang-Chi's mother in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Like that was what I was thinking of as I was watching Shang-Chi, was that fight in the Grandmaster.
Yeah.
God damn it. I kind of think Shang-Chi, having watched the Grandmaster again, I kind of think Shang-Chi comes out on top.
Yeah. Which is I even love the fight where they, it's the Tai Chi dude. And he's just like, you got to break this out of my hand. Like while it's in my hand.
Yeah.
That was amazing. I'm just watching what reminded me of, you know, I guess maybe like Tai Chi is the type of thing that Shang-Chi's mother was doing, because it felt like that.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
You know, I can't say for sure, but that's what it felt like, the way they were moving in that fight there. Is it felt like the same style as Shang-Chi's mom.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's just a layer that I just don't have as a viewer. Like just the ability to recognize all these different, and what makes these styles different and why they're different. Like the only thing I really got of that is like Kill Bill with like the Pai Mei stuff, to bring it back to Tarantino. Like that's a big part of that movie. Or something like the Keanu Reeves movie, Man of Tai Chi, which Yen Wu Ping also choreographed. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but that is also very much about a guy who's trying to bring respectability to Tai Chi as a martial art. And, like, okay. But just if those are your stakes, and those are the stakes in the Grandmaster, at least for Ip Man, I don't know. Like, there's just, like, a cultural block or some cultural distance that I have a hard time with.
So, I keep taking it to the movie Ip Man, because that's... I mean, it's talking about the same dude, so that's the one thing I can compare to. That's like, so like in Ip Man, he's fighting these other guys because he opens up the school and basically, like, to prove that you're worth going to.
Okay.
Like these other dudes are like, who's this fucking dude rolling into like our neighborhood, trying to open up a different style school, like. We'll show him what's up, you know, and then they challenge.
That sounds like a movie. That sounds like conflict. Like, born out of a real place.
Yeah, versus like this, I think they're like all trying to beat this guy because he's supposed to be their representative after.
Yeah, like
some dude dies.
Schools. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like some guy that's recognized as the head honcho dies, and like somebody's got to replace him. Ip Man's the dude. How do we do that? We gotta test to see if this dude can do that. And it felt weak. They were just fighting for no reason.
Yeah, that's just it's a really cold-blooded plot compared to like the hot-blooded plot of Gong Er, and it just doesn't compare.
Yeah,
I think it's a Poochie scenario where every time you're not with Gong Er, you're like, what's Gong Er doing? Where's Gong Er? I want to be with Gong Er, but instead you're watching it man make a dude throw up his lunch.
Yeah, and I a lot of times I love a good cold plot. That's Arrival, Ex Machina.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically anything that seems like it could have been written or made by Alex Garland. When you're making a cold plot, something else has to be the thing. And in those movies, you're in it for like, what are people saying to each other? How's the acting going?
Yeah, or just like, what's going to happen next? Like, everything can be played in that low register, or like a flat register. But like, if what's happening is compelling, then that's fine.
Yeah. But this is, you're just kind of like,
just not that compelling.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, that was cool. Oh, nice little fight there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're saying dope fight after everyone. That looked beautiful. But that's all you're doing is dope fight. You're not like, oh, shit, he could have lost that. And what happens when he loses? Or you're not really looking forward to the next fight.
Either. Yeah. Grandmaster, a little disappointing on this rewatch. Check out the Chinese cut if you can. Find it. Like, it is hard to find. I had to go to the local video store here, which like obsessively collects shit. One of the last remaining video stores, like in the entire country. Videodrome. Yeah. Great if you're in Atlanta.
Okay. But I'll remember that. I'm a man of the internet. Might be able to
find it online.
I'll find it.
Yeah. That's it for this trio of movies. Our next trio, we're keeping a very loose theme of just 2021 releases as the year is almost over. For our next three movies, we're going to be watching Steven Soderbergh's latest heist movie, No Sudden Move. We're going to be watching The Power of the Dog, a potential Best Picture frontrunner, Western by Jane Campion, and we're going to be watching The Matrix Resurrections, which comes out around Christmas on HBO Max. I have no idea what to expect from that movie. I think it's interesting that only one Wachowski is involved in it and the other one is not. I feel like that's not a great sign. But who knows? Maybe it'll be great. Trailers look interesting.
I'm about to go see it opening night.
Check out all our reviews of these last three movies and many more at MunichMovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Instagram at Munich Movie Club. Twitter at Munich Movicle. We've got a lot of plans for the next month. A lot of plans, meaning we're just going to do some extra podcast episodes about like the things we liked best in 2021. Licorice Pizza is coming out, so me and Pierce are going to do another director ranking for Paul Thomas Anderson this time. So that'll be a nice 2.5 hour long podcast that you can listen to on perhaps a drive back to your family if you live very, very far away. We'd love to keep you on the road and interested and not falling asleep. I trust that is what we're doing here at the Munich Movie Club for all of our many listeners, providing you with scintillating conversation that functions as well as a very strong cup of coffee. Thank you for joining me tonight, JR. Great conversation.
Yeah, no problem. Least I could do since I picked the movies.
Have a great night.